mutagen that was injected into our blood began to change us in miraculous ways. I saw how your father loved you, and I knew I had to show that same love to the turtles. I became their father, and they became my sons.
Welcome to another episode of the Turtle Dojo, a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles podcast. As always, I'm your host, Adam, and with me is my co-host, Chris. Chris, how's it going?
Having a great day so far, my friend. Good to talk to you, as always.
Awesome. Let's talk a little turtles, shall we? So this week, we're going to do something different. Normally, Chris and I come on here, and we'll either talk about the animated series, the classic animated series, or we'll talk about the classic Mirage comic book, which is currently are in our schedule. But we're gonna kind of switch things up a little bit this week. We're still talking turtles, of course, because that's the premise of the show. But Halloween is coming up, and that's one reason why we're diverting course a little bit. But also, I am adding another show to the network. I think this is the 540th show coming up, but we're doing a Ghostbusters inspired podcast. And as a sort of prequel to that, I thought it'd be cool if Chris and I went through the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Ghostbusters crossover, the first one that they've done. I haven't really told anybody but the co-host on that show that we're going to be doing the Ghostbusters show. So I'm sure Chris is now surprised by this development. But that's going to be mostly me and Donnie, a.k.a. the Emerald Enthusiast from the Green Lantern podcast. Of course, we'll hopefully have guests along the way, and other co-hosts can come in and do a guest spot on that show. So Chris is obviously more than welcome to venture over to that area of the network. He's actually, it's just a matter of scheduling, but he's probably going to end up being on a He-Man one as well down the line, and yes, one of the DC ones. So Chris will be all over the show at some point. He'll touch all the different aspects of the network. But maybe what we can do, is maybe we'll do volume two on the Ghostbusters show, and we'll have you cross over or cross the streams, as it were.
That sounds awesome. I look forward to it.
It'll be a crossover within my own network, which kind of, I sound like the president of the CW now, all this crossover talk. But Chris, before we get to the actual comic in question, which is four issues in duration, give me, because me and the audience are now familiar with your Ghostbusters, your Ninja Turtles history. So give me a little bit about your history and relationship with the Ghostbusters.
Well, my dad took me to the theater to see the original Ghostbusters movie in 1985. And I was always a huge fan of that. We had it on VHS when I was a kid. I remember seeing Ghostbusters 2 at the movie theater, and I was a big fan of that as well. I had the Ghostbusters action figures when I was a kid. I had the proton pack toy with the big like Nerf foam stream that came out the end of it, and my stepbrother and I both had those proton pack toys, as well as the trap toy. And now my son is into Ghostbusters. Luke, he'll be 6 years old next week, and I watched the original two movies with him probably about 6 months ago, and just a couple of weeks ago when he was at my house, he was like, "Daddy, can we watch Ghostbusters?" So now he's really into it as well. So, you know, it's fun for me both as a fan and as a dad that my son is into it. So, I've been a big fan since day one.
It's awesome that he's getting into it. Yeah, I know you told me that he has been watching the original Ninja Turtles movies. So you're raising him right, is what I could say. And the other thing I could say, don't do too good a job, because then he may take your job on the podcast. So you better watch out. You know, you don't want to get him too good. But no, I'm kidding.
He knows that I do a Ninja Turtles podcast with you, and he's like, "Daddy, can we do a podcast together?" So he's coming along in my footsteps.
Oh, good. That's good. I'm glad to hear that. One of the things you didn't mention, I'm curious, did you watch the cartoon as well?
Oh, for sure. I watched both Ghostbusters cartoon, which had nothing to do with the movie, and the real Ghostbusters, which was the one that was tied into the movie. So I watched both iterations of the Ghostbusters cartoon for sure.
Perfect. Now, when you think of crossovers that the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles could potentially have, where, like, before this thing came out or you heard about it, did it ever cross your mind that, hey, you know what'd be a cool crossover? Ghostbusters and Ninja Turtles. Like, did that ever?
That never crossed my mind. And I'm a big fan of crossovers, going back to like Archie Meets the Punisher, and even more recently, like the He-Man and Thundercats crossover. But I would have never picked these two properties. And when I was a kid, I had the Ghostbusters action figures and the Ninja Turtles action figures, but I can't say that I ever did my own crossover playing with them. That those were just two worlds that I did not think to mix together.
Yeah, I know that when I played with my, you know, my action figures and the toys and stuff, I always kept it within the franchise. So if I was playing, and I don't know if I did this on purpose or you know, I don't think it was on purpose. I didn't know any better back then. But, you know, it was always, when I was playing with Batman stuff, it was Batman, right? If it was Ninja Turtles, it was Ninja Turtles. And Ghostbusters, the same thing. I never, you know, got one toy from one franchise and another toy from another franchise and had them fight. Like, it never, you know, He-Man was fighting Skeletor, and that was the end of it. Like, there was no, I didn't suddenly pick up the Joker and say, "All right, He-Man, take him out." You know, so yeah, it's right. For whatever reason, like you, I never intermingled the action figures in their own crossover. Although, had I saw something like that in a cartoon or a comic book as a kid, you know, the idea probably would have sparked for sure. But yeah, I'm in the same boat as you. When I first heard about this, I was like, "What?" I get that they're owned by this, or they're published by the same comic company, but how's that really going to make sense? And so, with that in mind, that leads us into the comics. So, just to give people a background, how do the Turtles and the Ghostbusters come into contact with each other? Give us a little bit.
So basically, Donnie has developed like an interdimensional portal, right?
Right.
That's supposed to be able to translate or transfer matter from one place to another. And we see when testing it, Casey Jones is there, and they toss an apple into the portal, and it reappears behind Casey Jones and pops him in the head. So, you know, what do they call it? They call it an interspatial teleportation unit, I believe is what they call it.
Yeah, that's the official designation.
And so right when the turtles are testing it out with actual beings, with themselves and April and Casey, a fly lands on the control panel, which says, do not touch. And what's the scientist's name that's helping them?
Is it Honeycutt, right? Isn't it Professor Honeycutt? I think it is.
Yeah. Harold.
Yeah. Harold, yeah.
So
you're right. Harold is a different guy. Sorry, my mistake. I'm thinking of the Mirage stuff still.
Right.
But anyway, continue. Yeah.
Well, yeah, he goes to like shoo the fly away and he accidentally flips the switch that says do not touch, which causes a calculating error in the interdimensional interspatial teleportation unit. And the turtles are then transported to the right location, but in a different dimension. So they appear in New York City, but it's in the Ghostbusters dimension, which is obviously separate from the turtles.
Right.
And when doing so, they cause this being who's kind of like a demon to appear as well.
Right. Now, the demon has a really weird name. I think it's Achu, if I'm not mistaken.
Chi.
Okay, but I knew it was something like a sneeze. It sounded like a sneeze. So I just went with that as I was reading it. But yeah, so a couple of interesting things with just the way it began. First of all, obviously this came out before, the year that we're speaking in, which is 2020. But man, flies causing a bunch of crap is all the rage these days. This comic was weirdly prophetic in the sense that it might have been the same fly that was at the vice presidential debate. The jury's still out on that. But anyway, I was laughing when I actually reread this because I'm like, oh yeah, it was a fly that caused all this hubbub, and we all know who won the vice presidential debate, the fly. So that was funny. I had a good laugh with that. But I don't know if you're aware of this sci-fi property, Chris, but the machine that Donnie invents and that they use to cross over dimensions, does it not look like a Stargate to you?
It sure does. It looks just like a Stargate.
Yeah, and I was like, I love Stargate, and I love the Turtles, and I love Ghostbusters. I mean, this should already get a perfect score just based on these three, these three factors. But it was really cool because I'm like, now I'm in the mood to binge Stargate, which I may do starting in November. We'll see. That's about 17 seasons worth of television to binge. But who doesn't have time nowadays? I found that the machine had a striking visual resemblance to the Stargate, which was cool. One of the things that I really like when we have these kind of crossovers is the first meeting of the different characters, from the two different universes. And I love how each individual set of characters, the Turtles and the Ghostbusters, when they after the initial sort of where they're both battling with the ghost that the Turtles bring over, or the spirit that the Turtles bring over, when they first sort of have a second to kind of interact with each other, both camps are dismissive of the other. Like the idea of ghosts to the Ninja Turtles that have encountered aliens and humanoid animals, the idea of ghosts is so far-fetched and ridiculous and unbelievable. And then, vice versa. To the Ghostbusters, mutant Ninja Turtles, when they've handled all these kinds of ghosts and monsters, are this unbelievable thing. I found that funny, like very quite entertaining. That it should be like really, it's you've seen a bunch of both sides have seen a bunch of strange crap. Why is this so hard to believe? You know what I mean? What did you think of that and how that played out?
Well, it's, you know, whenever you have these types of crossovers, there's always the original misunderstanding when the two groups first have contact with one another. But, you know, when you think about it, if you look back in those properties, like in the Ghostbusters world, which is basically a real world setting just with ghosts, they've never encountered something like a talking mutant humanoid. Like Slimer is a thing, and Slimer even makes an appearance in this comic. Gozer, obviously, but these are spiritual entities. They're not actual humanoid figures.
Right.
And if you look at the Ninja Turtles, you know, they have encountered obviously their share of humanoid of mutants such as Bebop and Rocksteady, who make a pre-mutant appearance in one panel in this book in the background. But they've encountered spiritual type beings. So, you know, they did a good job with the setup, and they did a good job paying it off and seeing and teaching each other about what they know.
Oh yeah. I mean, as much as it shouldn't have been a shock to the each camp, I love that banter and that, oh my God, this is unbelievable. Like the back and forth was great. It was a great initial setup, that occurred there. I kind of like how, you know, the Ghostbusters and Turtles, like certain characters paired up with each other.
Yeah.
Because they were almost like the mirror opposite, you know, in their world, they're that version of things. So like Leonardo and Winston had a bond, you know, because, you know, Winston has a Marine background, I think it is, right? In this,
Yep, definitely. And yeah, you had
and Leo's the leader.
Right? You had Vinkman and Raph kind of pair off together.
Yeah, two hothead, arrogant characters.
And then you have Donnie and sort of Egon and Ray, because they're the three nerds out of the group.
Right, yeah.
And Mikey just being Mikey.
Yeah, and Mikey had a lot of interaction with Ray, which was fun. It's like, I love how like the mirror, like, you know, the similar personalities on each group kind of intermingled. Much like in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Batman crossover, Mikey was just obsessed with really two things: wearing the jumpsuit, and driving the car. And I love that about Mikey, because if I was, you know, suddenly given the chance to say, hey, you can hang out with the Ghostbusters for 48 to 72 hours, what do you want to do most? Well, slide down the firehouse pole, wear the outfit, and drive the car. I mean, the ectomobile. So, I mean, I love how in all of these stories, these crossover stories so far with the Turtles, Mikey is basically the audience, really.
Right.
You know, we're living vicariously through him. And I love that.
And he even gets to operate the siren in the car.
Yeah, which is a big, you know, which is a big selling point for him. And I also like that, you know, Donnie was nerding out over the proton packs, right? And the containment unit, like that was his big thing,
right?
Anytime that you can sort of take these characters and sort of have them have similar feelings that the audience reading would, it allows you to like put yourself in the story even more. right? So you're like, I find when they do this with these characters, you're not just reading as a fan anymore. Like, you feel part of the action. So it almost becomes like one of those VR experiences, even though you're just reading. I don't know if you get the same kind of feeling or if I'm just, you know, I get way too into these things, but that's how I felt. I was like, oh
yeah, I'm right there with you.
I feel part of the story. It was that was a cool component, just seeing each of them geek out over things and stuff like that. You know, a couple of interesting parts of the story is that, you know, at the earliest state, like, there are like 2-3 times, you know, there's really, three battles between the Turtles, the Ghostbusters, and the main ghost, or phantasm, or spirit, or however you want to phrase it. And, you know, 2/3 of the equation, you could say that the Turtles and the Ghostbusters, quote unquote, lose. And I love how it's, the book is not, hey, these are the two, you know, of course these characters are going to prevail. I mean, going into reading this, you're not thinking by issue 4, you know, our leads are going to get decimated and killed off in the book. Like, obviously, you know, that's not going to happen. Because that would, you know, be counterintuitive. But the fact that there's a struggle and there's a learning curve, despite these sets of heroes being the cream of the crop in their particular area of expertise, I think is really cool to watch play out. Like, to see these characters who you think have their, excuse my friend, you know, they're shit handled and everything together, they don't, and you see them overcome and learn from their failures, their early failures, and I like that. I don't like to see the hero just automatically, you know, destroy the villain, or like, where basically the villain, and to use wrestling terminology, the villain is not just a jobber, you know what I mean, where he comes in and he's there, he loses and you know, job well done, let's go home, the job's done. That would be boring storytelling. But do you enjoy watching how the Turtles lose and the Ghostbusters, and then seeing how they adapt the technology, change their strategy into how they eventually, you know, save New York?
Yeah, well, like you say, you already know going into it what the outcome is going to be. Like, this is a 4-issue limited series, and you know at the end of the 4th issue that the Turtles and the Ghostbusters will be victorious. But it's the journey that makes it enjoyable. So when you see them have to regroup and recalculate and formulate a new plan, that's where the enjoyment comes in reading something like this.
Now, and you know what I liked about it? I want to get your thoughts. Because, you know, in this world, you have Egon and Ray that are, like you said, the main scientists, and they do all the inventions and stuff. But it was really cool to see Donatello come up with the hand, the wrist device. Basically, it was like a mini proton pack on the wrist kind of thing. That was kind of cool. Like, I like seeing him sort of be responsible for that. Now, I don't know if it's carried over into, because I'm not there yet. I'm behind on my Ghostbusters reading. But I don't know if it's carried into the main title of Ghostbusters, but I like that Donnie had the hand in creating it.
Yeah, well, you know, Donnie is obviously brilliant. He's the inventor out of the Ninja Turtles crew. And when given access to the technology that the Ghostbusters possess, he's able to repurpose it into something that fits their needs. So I really like that combination of their technology being utilized by Donnie in a new way.
And I like the fact that he says, you know, you guys have technology here that I would have to invent back home.
Yep. So
in a world that is relatively, you know, quote unquote, our world, just with ghosts in the middle of it, it's nice that they have that, you know, a relatively normal Earth has the upper hand on the Earth with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and humanoid animals in terms of technology, which is kind of interesting and a fun little twist. And the technology thing is reciprocated in the sense that when it's time for the turtles to go back home, the containment unit, really, the storage, you know, unit, the power from that is used to help get the turtles home. So there's reciprocation there. Both, you know, Egon and Donatello get to have their "I'm the smartest guy in the room" moment, and that's cool. Where you know, where both properties, by the end of the whole thing, you know, each set of characters, you know, gets to shine and gets to look, you know, like the top dog going back into their own solo series. I like
that. Yeah, well, it gives them both agency in the story, right?
Yeah.
So they're each bringing something to the table.
Because theoretically, going into the Ghostbusters world, the Ninja Turtles should be at a disadvantage, theoretically. Because, you know, this is not their forte. And I kind of like that. To me, it works that the villain, what was his name again? Yeah, because otherwise I'm going to make a sneezing
sound.
Chiyu. Chiyu, there we go. Close enough. Anyway, Chiyu, yeah, I like the fact that he's from the Turtles world because, and it kind of makes sense because with reincarnation and how prevalent that is in the Turtles mythology, you can have a situation where a spirit can be the cause of some problem. And it's not, you know, too out of left field. You know what I mean? Whereas if this was a crossover with say, Batman and the Ghostbusters, I mean, what character are you going to bring over from Batman's world?
Yeah, that's a good point. Because of the spiritual nature of the villain, he's able to kind of straddle both worlds, whereas he's a spirit from the Ninja Turtles dimension, but he's almost sort of repurposed as a ghost in the Ghostbusters dimension.
Yeah, exactly. Now, what did you think of the villain and specifically the use of how they worked, how they tied Casey Jones in with the villain?
I thought that was a good move because it gave the Ninja Turtles something to fight for rather than being like, look, we're just going to get out of here and get back to our world and leave you to deal with this, which might have been the case if they weren't trying to free their friend. For the listener who may not have read it, the main bad guy, Chiyu, he has what are called thralls, which are basically he's able to manipulate, to possess human beings and make them do his bidding. So he has latched on to Casey Jones, and that gives the Turtles and April something to fight for before being sent home.
Yeah. I loved it. And I think what I really loved about it was after the fact, when Casey was sort of freed from you know, being mind controlled and being sort of the puppet of the main villain, I like that, you know, basically the Turtles had the out. Like even the Ghostbusters said, "You can go now. We'll handle this." And Leo's like, "No, we brought this on your doorstep. We're gonna help you take it out, and then we'll go." And I liked also too, because I didn't say this, and I don't want to belittle either character. I love the brief moments that Janine and April had with each other.
Yeah, well, that's just a natural pairing, right? They're the human helpers for both the Turtles and the Ghostbusters, so right, pairing them off just makes all the logical sense in the world.
And it's funny, as a kid, you're kind of like, again, I don't know that, like, see how, like, this book sort of really highlights how, you know, each of the Ghostbusters really has a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle opposite. As a kid, let's say if I watched the two cartoons back to back, I don't know that I would have picked up on, hey, Raphael's a lot like Ray, and Michelangelo's Raphael's a lot like Peter, and you know, Michelangelo's a lot like Ray, and you know, I don't necessarily know if I would have made, if you put two episodes in front of younger me back to back, I don't know if I would have made the connection.
Yeah, I really like the Raphael and Peter connection because they're both, you know, they're both sarcastic. Like they're, you said, they're both my spirit animals, hotheads.
I would love those two characters.
Yeah, it just shows the creativity that the writers have to possess to even be able to come up with something like that. I mean, to even consider a crossover between the two. Like, that's a really creative endeavor.
Right, yeah. And I liked it. And, you know, I find that in you know, really, it's funny that now we've had two, I mean, we're officially now, we've talked about two crossovers between, you know, the TMNT with Batman and the TMNT with the Ghostbusters. And essentially, you could argue that the Martha moment in both books revolves around pizza, pretty much. It's like once they have that pizza, we're all good. Right? Like, you know, pizza is the unifying factor of you know, alternate universes. And I think that's an important lesson that kids can learn from reading this book.
Yeah, no matter, what's the pizza they have in this one? It's pineapple and sriracha.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd put pineapple. Like, to me, as somebody of Italian descent, that is still an insult, putting pineapple on pizza. So I get a little bit, you know, squeamish when somebody, it's like, well, why? Like, I love pineapple, but pineapple needs to be, you know, after the pizza as a fruit. You know, but aside from that, yeah, I mean, that's a good lesson for the kids, that pizza is a unifying element between dimensions.
They're all from New York, so you know they know.
Yeah, they have that. Yeah. They have the New York connection as well. So now we have to talk about the art, because the art in reading both comics as I do separately, the art skews, you know, more towards the Ghostbusters solo book, more so than it does the Turtles franchise. You know, if I had to, you know. And so what do you think of the art style of this book?
I enjoyed it. I haven't read the Ghostbusters ongoing series, but like you say, I mean, I like that they create a distinct look for each of the four Ghostbusters, and the Turtles being humanoid Turtles, they already look kind of silly anyway, so you can almost drop them into any other property, and they're still the Turtles. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Not like you're crossing over this Ghostbuster style with something like a Jim Lee Batman, where that Batman would be really out of place because they're all human creatures. Like the Batman, like in that style, is just drawn so much differently. But the Ninja Turtles being humanoid green turtles, you can almost sort of drop them into anywhere and they're going to look out of place. I mean, they're going to fit, but at the same time, they're going to look out of place because that they look out of place in their own book when compared to humans.
Now, having since you brought it up, having said that, if Jim Lee ever wants to draw a Batman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles crossover, where can I sign?
I'm down for that.
I don't care how out of place they look. I'd like to see it. But I've said this to a friend of mine, and I want to get your thoughts. When I look at the Ghostbusters as they're designed in their regular book and this book, I get a sense that the artist is essentially, what he's trying to do is merge the movie and the real Ghostbusters designs. It's kind of a best of both worlds. Do you get that sense?
Yeah, because, you know, I'd say it almost skews a little bit more towards the cartoon because...
Yeah, it's about 60-40.
All four Ghostbusters have their own distinct look, but it's not like the Venkman in this book looks like Bill Murray. Do you know what I'm saying? Right. Like, you can tell that it's Peter by the hair and, you know, by the a little bit in the face, but, like, the characters don't exactly look like a copy of their live-action film counterparts. Yeah,
it's not like an Alex Ross image where, hey, that's Bill Murray, you know.
Which I appreciate. I'm glad they didn't just try to go for, you know, looking like the movie.
Well, imagine how much that would have cost for the rights to get Bill Murray's, like, actual likeness.
Right.
That would have been... Yeah, but the reason I say it's a mix of the two is because, like, in the cartoon, you know, Egon was blonde.
Oh, yeah, right? That's true.
Or he looked more like... blonde is not even the real answer. He looked like Ric Flair. His hairdo was, like, you know, very Ric Flair.
And it had that big swoop to it, that big kind of, like, curl. Yeah. Whereas this one has more of, like, a bouffant hairstyle.
Right, yeah. So... So yeah, it's a mix of both, but you're right. It does skew more to the cartoon. Now, as I said, there were three big, you know, quote unquote action set pieces to kind of you know, use movie terminology. Which was your favorite? Which page, you know, stood out, or pages?
For me, what really stood out was the battle in issue 3 when the fully possessed Casey Jones makes his appearance, because Casey looks like a bad man with his cape and the glowing blue eyes. And he's all swole up a lot, you know, his muscles are a lot bigger. So when Chi Yu has taken over Casey fully, when Casey's no longer struggling, and Casey makes his big form. I really liked that action set piece because the Turtles, I mean, Casey just looks badass, and the Turtles have to fight him as well as Chi-Yu. And yeah, that's when Chi-Yu is taken down by Venkman with the big, what looks like a bazooka blaster.
Right, yeah.
Now, but yeah, the fight in issue 3 is the one that, I mean... It's about 4 or 5 pages long, and I really enjoyed that one.
Right. Yeah, that's a good choice. That's a very good choice. For me, honest to God, every page in this in all four issues looks great. So there's no you know, page that looks inferior or anything like that. But
I agree.
For me, the section that really gets me going is when they go to the hockey game and they're fighting him in Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, that was pretty sweet.
In the middle of a playoff game. Now, I'm a hockey obsessed, you know, fan. So, you know, seeing that was awesome. It was a much better use of hockey than Batman and Robin in 1997. I'll say that first and foremost. And then secondly, the fact that if you look at the architecture of the arena, they've got some of Madison Square Garden nailed down, you know, perfectly in a more animated form, but it's, you know, the roof, you can clearly tell that's Madison Square Garden. So they're playing with the landmark and they're doing quite well. But just, you know, the Ghostbusters and Ninja Turtles converging on a hockey ice surface to battle a ghost is something I never thought I'd see, and now I have it. And that makes it my fight of the book. Yeah.
That's a combination of three things that you're really into. Turtles, the Ghostbusters, and hockey.
Yeah. It's and it shows that when you do it right, I mean, it's nothing but a, you know, two thumbs up for me. And then you have the example of doing it wrong, which is 1997. But yeah, so that's my page. But overall, is there anything else you wanted to add about this book that we maybe missed over before we read it and close the show?
You know, I don't think there's anything specifically from the book that I want to mention that we haven't already. Just that, you know, I love the Batman and Ninja Turtles animated movie. I would absolutely be into Ninja Turtles Ghostbusters animated movie. I could get behind that 100%.
Absolutely agreed. I mean, Nickelodeon, Ghost Corps, whoever else has Sony Animation, whoever else has to get on board and sign the deal. Let's go. Sign it and let's get this off the ground, because I think a movie like that would do on home media, especially now, you know, in the world we're living in, where home media is basically pretty much the only media you're gonna get for, you know, the foreseeable future. That'd be great. And they could even bring back the real Ghostbusters designs for the purpose of the animation.
Sure.
If they wanted to. Like, I don't care. Just do it. It's, you know, now that you mentioned it, I really want it. So, come on, everybody. Christmas is around the corner. What a great announcement that would be. But, yeah. So, couldn't agree more with that. But I guess let's do... final thoughts, and then a grade.
Final thoughts. This was a four-issue series that held my attention the entire time. There wasn't any point in time reading it where I was bored and just waiting to see what came next. Like, I was engaged the entire time I was reading it, and hats off to the creators who even thought up this idea. But from the artwork to the story to the dialogue, I give it all a big thumbs up, man. I was a really big fan of this series.
Awesome. So, final letter grade, what would it be for you?
Oh, letter grade? I'm giving it an A, man. Like, it had everything that you could want.
I forgot. Did we do letter grades or do we do number? I can't remember, but we'll do letter grades.
You know what? I meant to bring this up. We have done both. We've done letter grades.
All right, so we're just alternating. So for this one, we'll just go letter grade. I'll come up with a consistent system at some point, but I don't know when that'll be. Folks, there's 500 podcasts. I can't keep you straight. So it's an A for you?
Oh, easy A.
Which is also an Emma Stone movie. If you haven't checked that out, because Emma Stone is fantastic. But for me, like I said, this was a blast to read. I mean, it was pure joy, pure fun. And if you're a fan, if you're a child of the late 80s, early 90s, you know, mid to late 80s, early 90s, this book is a win in every sense of the word for you. It's a must read if you love both franchises, or if you just like one and want to read something about that franchise, I would recommend this, because chances are, if you don't like the other franchise, this book will might make you want to pick up a comic featuring whichever other franchise that you're not a fan of.
Like now I want to read the Ghostbusters comic just because of reading this. I'm going to seek that out now.
I think it's that good, and you're proof of that. It's that good that it will cause you to want to read one of these two properties that you're not reading, for sure. And like I said, there's not one lull in this story. It's edge of your seat enjoyment from issue one to issue four. So for me, I found absolutely no faults in this story at all. I'm going to give it an A+.
Solid.
So with that said, we've covered everything. We both recommend that if you haven't read this, you go out and seek it and pick it up at your local comic shop if they have copies left. Otherwise, it's available on Comixology. So go there and check that out, but definitely give it a read. And if you want to keep talking either Ghostbusters or Ninja Turtles with Chris or me, you can do that on social media. So Chris, if they want to get a hold of you and talk with you, where can they do that?
Well, you can join us on the Facebook page, the Multiversity Musings Podcast Network Facebook page, where we'll post about this, and we'll be happy to entertain all comments and discussion about it. But if you want to find me individually on Twitter, that's at Chris N. Harrelson.
Right. And if you want to find me on social media, it's Adam_LeafFan on Twitter. And we hope you had a fantastic time listening to this, as we enjoyed recording it for you and talking about this great book. Until next time, we want to remind you that both the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and the Ghostbusters are forever, from their first team up to their last. And remember that whenever you're having a pizza party, cowabunga is the word, and don't cross the streams. So long, everybody.
Take care, guys.
Hey, what do you guys want to eat?
Pizza!
Cowabunga, dude.